Father of all Prajapatis,
Brahma,
thus seeing all his Prajapati sons,
speaking in that way,
became very much ashamed,
and at once gave up his body.
He had accepted.
Later that body
appeared in all directions
as the dangerous fog
in darkness.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
The best way to compensate for one's sinful acts is to give up one's body at once. And Brahma, the leader of the living entities, showed this by his personal example. Brahma has a fabulous duration of life, but he was obliged to give up his body due to his grievous sin, even though he had merely contemplated it in his mind without having actually done it. This is a lesson for the living entities, showing how sinful an act it is to indulge in unrestricted sex life. Even to think of abominable sex life is sinful. And to compensate for such sinful acts, one has to give up his body. In other words, one's duration of life, blessings, opulence, etc. are decreased by sinful acts. And the most dangerous type of sinful act is unrestricted sex. Ignorance is the cause of sinful life. Or sinful life is the cause of gross ignorance. The feature of ignorance is darkness or fog. Darkness or fog still covers the whole universe, and the sun is the only counteracting principle. One who takes shelter of the Lord, the perpetual light, has no fear of being annihilated in the darkness of fog or ignorance. Sa itthaṃ grinata putrān puradrishtā prajāpatīn prajāpati patistanyaṃ tattayāja briritas tadā tāṃ diśo jagrihur ghorāṃ nīharaṃ yad vidustamaha. The father of all prajāpatīs, Brahmā, thus seeing all his prajāpati sons speaking in that way, became very much ashamed and at once gave up his body he had accepted. Later that body appeared in all directions as the dangerous fog in darkness. So, this part of Srimad Bhagavatam is dealing with the creation aspect, the initial creation, and then sub-creation. The first aspect is the creation, and then the sub-creation. The creation began with the Lord breathing, lying in the causal ocean. Mahavishnu lies in the causal ocean, Karan Samudra, Karan Vari. And he breathes, and as a result of his breathing, different innumerable universes are generated from his body. Then he enters into each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And then from his navel comes out Lord Brahma. So this is the initial phase of creation. And then Brahma begins the sub-creation. That sarga aspect is up to Mahavishnu, and then Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Then Brahma comes in. And then the secondary creation, or Visarga, begins. So Visarga aspect, the secondary creation, is Brahma comes in the universe, and the whole description is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, how Brahma, the first created being, receive the transcendental knowledge by meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma also was in ignorance. Brahma was in ignorance. He did not know who he was. When he appeared, he didn't know who he was. He didn't know what he was supposed to do. And this way, he was confused. He was wondering, what am I going to do now? Who am I? Where did I come from? And then, after a whole lot of external endeavor, when Brahma became frustrated, realized that through this external endeavor, he is never going to find out who he was, where he came from, and so forth. Then Brahma began to meditate. Actually, Brahma didn't begin to meditate straight away. He was confused and he was sitting there in total bewilderment. Now what to do? What am I going to do? When all our external endeavors are exhausted and when we become completely bewildered and hopeless, then by the mercy of the Lord comes the spiritual understanding. Therefore, in order to accept spiritual life, we have to be totally exhausted. No hope. The spiritual life really begins when we become completely hopeless. That there is no way we are going to enjoy in the material nature. There is no way we are going to find the purpose of our existence through this material involvement. Then it happened when Brahma came to that situation, then the mercy of the Lord became bestowed upon him. The Lord then responded. He instructed Brahma from within. Because for Brahma there was no, Brahma was the first created being in this universe. So in the universe there was nobody who could actually instruct Brahma. Therefore Brahma's situation was very special situation. The Lord himself gave him the instructions. Although some impetus was there externally, the splashing of the waves in the Garbha ocean, when they created the sound tapaha tapaha, that inspired Brahma to perform austerities, that is, withdraw his consciousness from external involvement to projection internally. He realized, now I have to project my consciousness internally. And that is the tapaha, austerity. So then Brahma began to meditate upon. Brahma withdrew his senses and then Brahma heard the sound. He heard the sound of pranav, and that from pranav it became manifested in the form of Gayatri. And then Brahma began to meditate on Gayatri, and as a result of meditation on Gayatri, the Dibya Gyan, the transcendental knowledge, became revealed in his heart. And that revelation of the transcendental knowledge, Dibya Gyan, is perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual sky. So in simple words, one can say that Brahma was transported to the spiritual sky. In the spiritual sky, he saw the Lord and he received the instructions from him, what he must do. So this has been described previously in Srimad Bhagavatam, and this has been also described elaborately in Brahma Samhita. So then Brahma began the creation. Brahma realized, now the Lord instructed me, this is my job now, to fill up the universe with living entities. So Brahma began the creation. The first aspect of Brahma's creation was the four Kumaras. They came out from Brahma's mind. Then came the Rudra, the manifestation of Lord Shiva in this material nature, who takes care of the destruction aspect, the destroyer, Rudra. appeared from Brahma. And then came the 10 more sons from his mind again. All these creations are from Brahma's mind. And in a subtle form, in a subtle way, they are becoming manifest. And then came these 10 sons, and out of those 10 sons, 9 helped Brahma in the responsibility of creating progeny, praja. And the youngest one was Narad Muni. Narad Muni didn't get involved in all these affairs. This troublesome job of getting involved in the materialistic activities for the sake of maintaining this universe. Brahma was absorbed in the transcendental knowledge. Narad was involved in transcendental knowledge, like his other 4 brothers, 4 Kumaras. He didn't want to get involved in materialistic affairs. And then the procreation started, the progeny or creation started. Different types of living entities were generated. Different aspects of creation began. So that have been elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the Prajapatis, one aspect of the Prajapatis was, or one incidence at that time was, that Brahma's, Brahma's mind came another personality, that is Saraswati. Here her name has been described as Bak. Bak or sound or speech. Bak literally means speech. So she is the goddess of speech, Bak Devi. She has another name, Saraswati. She has another name.
Vani.
Vani, Vaya. I was thinking of another name that is with Gira. Bak and Gira is the same. Like Badanang Gadgada Ruddhaya Gira. My voice is choked. Gira and Vani and Bak are all the same. So Brahma develops some sort of lusty attitude towards her. She was so attractive that Brahma became attracted to her, although she was the daughter. You know, it all happened in mind, and his sons, the Prajapatis, they noticed it. And these are all such elevated personalities that they can't even understand what's going on in somebody's mind. And they became very upset with Brahma. They felt that Brahma all is such an exalted personality. This kind of act is not befitting Lord Brahma. And so, and they also kind of in a mild way, collectively, they chastised or pointed out that never ever such an act been performed by any other Brahma, nor did you yourself in any other kalpa have acted in this way. And then Brahma, being accosted by his own sons, became very ashamed. Brihritastada. Due to that incident, Brahma became very ashamed. And Brahma gave up his body. So, but Brahma is such an exalted personality, like exalted in the sense he is in such an elevated stage, that although he gave up his body, his existence didn't cease. He didn't stop to exist. he continued to exist. That is ultimately who is the personality? Personality is the soul. But since the body became contaminated, Brahma felt this body is useless. So he gave up that body. And it has been described that that body of Brahma became Nihara, means fog. So when you see fog, what does fog do? It covers our vision. It covers our ability to see. That is ignorance. So anything that covers our knowledge is ignorance. So Prabhupada pointed out that these lusty desires are product of ignorance and vice versa. Lusty desires are product of ignorance and ignorance is product of lusty desire. It is due to a lust that we become involved in ignorance. And it is due to ignorance that these desires come to our minds. But here Prabhupada makes another point that the fogs come, but then as the sun comes up, fogs disappear. Ignorance is there, but as soon as the sun comes up, all the ignorance is destroyed. The ignorance can be in the form of darkness, of night, total darkness, or it can be in the form of mist or fog or cloud. This material nature is like a cloud that is covering. Often Prabhupada is to give that example that the cloud is causing the absence of the sun from our eyes. When there is cloud, we cannot see the sun. In a cloudy day, we cannot see the sun. Sometimes when it is very intense cloud and rain, then it becomes semi-dark. There is no sun. But sun is there. We often see that, like we are about to take off. The whole place is raining, torrents of rain, it's completely covered. The sky is completely overcast with cloud and it's raining torrentially. And then you take off, and then as you go up beyond the sky, beyond the cloud, then you see the sun. Below there is the darkness, but above this cloud, the sun is there. So Maya is something like that. Maya is like a cloud. A part of the universe, and part of the material nature is covered by the cloud. That cloud is the cloud of Maya. And those who are under this cloud, they are not able to see the sun. But when they go above the cloud, your sun is there. So, all we have to do is to take a plane and fly out beyond the cloud. And that aircraft is ISKCON. ISKCON is providing us with that facility to go beyond that cloud. And when you go beyond the cloud, then we are beyond Maya. So this point is very important. Prabhupada is saying that those who are aspiring for spiritual life, they have to become very, very strict. Maya's allurements will be there, but we have to overcome Maya. And in the age of Kali, the Maya's influence is the worst, the most severe, most degrading in this age of Kali. Maya is so strong in this age. Wherever you go, everywhere there are advertisements of Maya. In India also it is becoming very prominent nowadays. Most of the advertisements are displaying beautiful form of a woman, alluring. That is what Maya is. And Maya is
alluring the living entities, come and enjoy me. So Maya's representatives are alluring the living entities. And those allurement of Maya is leading them to sinful activity. And as a result of sinful activities, they are suffering. People are trying to enjoy, but actually they are suffering. Everyone in this world trying to enjoy through their sense gratification, so the result of that enjoyment or result of that endeavor is suffering, not enjoyment. No one is enjoying in this material nature. Through this material indulgence, one can never enjoy. The allurements are there, come and enjoy. But actually, they are being allured to suffer. Like graphically, it can be portrayed this way, that in one hand Maya is saying, come, come. And on the other hand, Maya has a whip or a stick. So Maya is saying, come, come, and as one goes. So that is how Maya is punishing the living entity. Therefore, those who want to make spiritual advancement, they have to rise above Maya. And how can one rise above Maya? One can rise above Maya only by taking shelter of Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna's devotees. And when one takes to Krishna consciousness, then what happens? Then the living entity sees things in a proper perspective. What is the first perception of a living entity when he comes to spiritual platform? The first thing that he learns is to respect the opposite sex. A devotee must be respectful towards the women. Actually, that is the Vedic civilization. Matrivat paradareshu. All the women other than one's wife should be treated as mother. Some devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, should we even see the young girls also as mother? Prabhupada said, yes, even a child should be seen as your mother. So that is how a devotee sees. Matrivat paradareshu. So seeing as mother means what? Seeing her with respect. Some people, they just say, okay, I don't look at any woman. Then rather blind yourself. Will it be beneficial? But not looking at the women, can you overcome your sex desire, which is there inside, it's not outside. The sex desire is inside. So here we have to actually deal with it, within our hearts. And the way to do it is first by developing proper understanding, developing respect. First you develop respect for women. And Vedic culture is pointing out that when a man develops respect for a woman, then what happens? His character becomes strong. Like, not only in the Vedic culture, I often think of King Arthur's, the knights of the round table. The head of the best of all the knights of King Arthur was Sir Lancelot. And Lancelot was a brahmachari. He had absolute respect for women. Actually, those days, all the knights had deep respect for women. There is a saying, damsel in distress. Whenever a woman is in distress, whenever a woman is in distress, the knight would go and rescue. So to be a valiant hero, to be heroic by nature, one must develop respect for women. A person who doesn't give respect to women cannot have a good character. Or rather, a person who doesn't look at a woman with respect, his character is, he doesn't have any character. And those people are called debauchees, vile, degraded person. So that is the first aspect, which is the first stage of spiritual life. Spiritual life means brahmachari life. Now, does it mean that everybody has to be a brahmachari? And Prabhupada pointed out that in ISKCON, even the householders are brahmacharis. That is, when husband and wife have relationship only for the sake of procreation, then that is also brahmachari life. That's brahmachari. And in order to become spiritually situated, one has to become brahmachari. Actually, brahmachari means spiritually situated. Brahma acharati iti. What is Brahman? What is Brahma? Brahma means spiritual. Brahman means spiritual. And acharati means one who acts on that platform. One who is situated on spiritual platform, he is brahmachari. Like when one, which means when one is properly situated in spiritual life, he will naturally become a brahmachari. He doesn't have to separately endeavor for becoming a brahmachari. He'll naturally become a brahmachari. That means, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is pointing out, param drishta nivartante. By getting the higher taste, he gives up lower taste. When one gets the higher taste, he automatically gives up the lower taste. He doesn't have any interest in lower taste, lower activities, base activities. And then, and the ultimate stage, what happens? In ultimate stage, one sees that all the women are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is making that point. Kaminir kam nahe tabo dham tahar malik keval jadav. The beauty of a woman is not for you to enjoy. The enjoyer of the beauty of a woman is Krishna, jadav. And who are you? You are the servant of Krishna. So if you see some beautiful woman, if you are, then recognize that beauty is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And we must engage everyone in the service of Krishna. And automatically then what will happen? We'll develop a reverential attitude towards every living entity. So this is the ultimate solution. Yes, material nature is very dangerous. Especially in the age of Kali, this material nature is extremely dangerous. Now what to do? The only solution is become Krishna conscious. And if you become Krishna conscious, you will see how all the problems are solved immediately. Take to Krishna consciousness, all the problems are solved. It may not solve straight away, but stay in the association of devotees, you will see all the problems are gradually being solved. And we see, like, when we are in the association of devotees, doesn't matter how weak we may be, we become fixed up in our spiritual life without deviation. Association of devotee gives the protection from all kinds of onslaughts of Maya. So this is the solution. Stay in the association of devotees. And then automatically we will become free from the sinful influence of the age of Kali. The problem is there, but wonderful solution is also there. Krishna comes and gives the solution. Krishna has given the solution in this way. This, in one hand, it's a very, very degraded age. Kale doshe nidhe rajan. That is the state of affairs in the age of Kali. It's an extremely degraded age. It's like an ocean of sinful activities. So that is one aspect, but asti hi eko mahan guna. But it has one, although it is an extremely dangerous situation, but it has a wonderful benefit also. And what's the benefit? Kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sanga param praja. Just chant the holy name of the Lord in association of devotees, you'll very easily become free from the influence of the material nature. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hare. Does anybody have any question?
I have three questions. First is that, that one has to be exhausted in materially to take to Krishna consciousness. So, but it is not true that only one has to be, only those who are failures in their material sphere are generally
taken.
So what's the difference between being a failure and being exhausted?
Yeah. You see, somebody may fail, but may not give up. Right? Like King Bruce. You know the story? There was a king in England. He was defeated many times by his enemy. And still he didn't give up. But when he came to a point, he almost gave up. Then he was actually hiding in a cave. Then he saw that a spider was trying to jump up. And it was failing and failing, and finally it succeeded. So he got the inspiration from that. And he decided not to give up, and he fought. And anyway, that's another story. But the point is that the failure is not the source of exhaustion. The source of exhaustion actually is also with the material nature is wisdom, knowledge, understanding. The thing is, see, as long as you think that there is some hope in this material nature, you can't take Krishna, take to Krishna consciousness. We have to come to the point when we have to feel like, you know, it's a hopeless situation. That is, I'm not going to get what I want in this material nature. Right? And therefore, when he comes across Krishna consciousness, if he's intelligent, then it dawns in him straight away. This is it. I've been trying to enjoy in this material nature, but I'm seeing that there is no enjoyment. This is not what I want. This is material enjoyment, material success, material achievements is not what I actually want. Then he gets the information about Krishna consciousness. Then it occurs to him, yes, this is it. And that is how some people take to Krishna consciousness while others cannot. Krishna consciousness is offered to everybody. But those who are situated in knowledge, they only can understand it and accept it. This is it. And then, by accepting Krishna consciousness, he realizes, after all, there was nothing I had to give up. I'm still doing the same things. Only thing is that what I accepted is just Krishna in my life. And recognize myself as a servant, as a dependent. All this while I was thinking that I'll try to be independent and I'll enjoy. But now I realized that my situation is that of a dependent one, not an independent one. And I'm depending upon Krishna and everything is being provided. Now I'm seeing how everything is being provided by Krishna. Previously also everything was being provided by Krishna, but I didn't see it.
But now I'm realizing that everything is being provided by Krishna. So that's the difference.
It is said here that one has to give up one's body when one is engaged in illicit sexual activities. So is that actually the standard or the prescription even for devotees of Islam?
There was a very interesting discussion in this respect with Srila Prabhupada and some of his senior disciples. The discussion actually led to that point, that if we maintain that standard, then there won't be any ISKCON left. mentally, this we are talking about the mental fall down. Brahma did not, and actually that discussion was in relation to Chota Haridas. Chota Haridas just looked at a woman lustfully. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu detected that from the rice that he collected from that house. While he was taking the rice, Mahaprabhu felt something was wrong. Mahaprabhu asked, "Where did this rice come from?" And he was told that Chota Haridas got it from Madhavi Devi's house. Bhagavad Acharya invited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he sent Chota Haridas to collect the rice from Sikhi Maitri's sister's Madhavi Devi's house. Now Madhavi Devi was an old and a very chaste and a very pure lady. So the question came up in this respect, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him. He said, "Don't let him come to me." And devotees became very surprised, and for 1 year Mahaprabhu did not see him. He waited for 1 year. He was banished from the community, from the association of Mahaprabhu. He was a kirtaniya. He used to sing very well. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu associates, they were appealing to Mahaprabhu, "Please accept him. After all, he is your associate. He is your he is suffering so much being banished by you in this way." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected, did not accept. He even went to the extent of telling that if you all are so attached to him, then you all stay with him. I am leaving. So then they stopped persuading Mahaprabhu. And Chota Haridas waited for 1 year and Mahaprabhu didn't accept him. So then Chota Haridas gave up his body in Triveni. And then one day Mahaprabhu asked, "So what happened to Chota Haridas?" And he was told that Chota Haridas gave up his body. And he actually became a Gandharva. And he used to sing. And they, at night they would hear Chota Haridas singing. So he actually became a Gandharva. And Mahaprabhu said, "That's good." So this is how strict Mahaprabhu was. And that also reminds me, one sannyasi, Vishnujan Maharaj, he probably had some difficulty and he came and asked Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was very strict also. And then he gave up his body. He went to Triveni. Later on, it came out that, Vishnujan just disappeared. No one knew where he was. Then they found out some Brahmana told in Triveni, in that area, Allahabad, that one Western person gave up his body in this way. Prabhupada felt very bad after that. He said that, "Why did he do that? His Krishna consciousness is all purified." So, and then Prabhupada actually said that just that one fell down, that itself is suicide. Because you got a chance to get to Krishna, go to Krishna. And if you miss that opportunity,
Isn't that suicide? So the point is, when we take to Krishna consciousness, we should not deviate from that. And especially those who take to sannyas, they have to have this understanding very clear. If I fall down, then giving up my body in Triveni is the solution. And this way, one should be strict with himself, but one should be lenient with others. Not that, you go down, give up your body. Rather, the feeling should be that if it happens to me, then that's what I should act. That's what I should do. But let others, let them be alright. Let them be. Let them carry on. Because Krishna consciousness is all purified. So this is a standard that it's important that we maintain. Yes, there should be strictness. But the strictness should be individually. But towards others, with ourselves we should be strict, but with others we should be liberal.
Respect for women. While we give respect, is it necessary? To what extent is it necessary to maintain a distance from them? Because in ISKCON, very often we have to deal with women. So is it better to avoid even as far as possible, even any kind of interaction?
That's not, as you said, like in ISKCON, it is not possible. Generally, in other ashrams in India, women are not allowed to stay in the temple or be involved in activities so much. Like Swami Narayan, they have nothing to do with women. If there are women, they put a curtain between them. And I heard that even when they take flight, sometimes they fly and Pramukh Swami goes, hires the entire aircraft, a Boeing 747, and they put curtains in the plane. And they make arrangements Prabhupada was practical. Especially when Prabhupada went to preach in America, he saw, Prabhupada said that here men and women are striding alongside each other. So how can you segregate? How can you separate? It will be artificial. You don't be practical. And therefore Prabhupada allowed women to stay in ISKCON ashram. Actually, one of the first persons that came and stayed in the ashram, the first Matajis, was Jadurani. She insisted that Prabhupada has to let her stay in the ashram. Because she didn't want to stay with her parents. She was completely fried. And she took shelter of Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada tried to reason with her that no, women shouldn't stay in an ashram and this, that. And so she insisted and insisted and insisted. Finally Prabhupada said, okay. Prabhupada allowed her to stay, and then it became the standard in his home. But at the same time, like certain distance should be maintained. For brahmacharis, as much as possible, they should stay away from direct communication. And sannyas is also, it is preferable, but when you are a spiritual master, when you are leading so many disciples, it's not practical, so then you have to. But the standard is that always somebody should be there when a sannyasi is speaking to a woman. Some other man must be there. So that strictness must be there, and we should not, we should be very careful not to give up those standards that Prabhupada said or was said during Prabhupada's time.
And now another thing is entering into ISKCON, another culture is entering into ISKCON, where women do not like to be called as mother. They don't want to be called as mother. They want to be called, they are demanding that we have to call them as Prabhus. So we have to understand that these are the influence of the age of Kali. Kali is entering in another way. I mean, why? Prabhupada didn't even want the women to be called a sister. Not sister. Prabhupada's point was mother. Mother. Matribhat paradareshu. So, anyway, let us see what happens. At least, I am trying to maintain the standard that Prabhupada set up, and wherever I am involved, I want them to follow that standard. Like what is happening in other places, what can be done. Like women's rights is such a big, such a thing in today's world. And they're saying, why are you making, once a woman said, told Prabhupada, why are you making discrimination? Prabhupada said, I didn't make the discrimination. Nature made the discrimination. Nature made the discrimination. Women are separate from men. Women are different. So why should we say men and women are the same? That they're two different bodies. And these two different bodies has two different functions. So we have to recognize that. But we should be, anyway, we should be careful to maintain the right standard. And when we have to deal, as we said, like we have to deal with them with due respect. Matrivat paradarishu. Then we are safe. And we should maintain that safety. We should maintain that respect, and we should remain in the association of devotees. And then ultimately, of course, we are not our bodies. But as long as we have this influence of the bodily designation, as long as we are identifying ourselves with the body, then automatically we will also relate to others in the bodily designation. So let's not pretend that to be in a certain level when we are not. Ramananda Roy could deal with women in a certain way, but we should not dare to trade in that kind of situation.
And just a simple question, like how many direct sons did Brahma have? Direct, apart from the Prajapatis and all, were there others also? Sometimes we hear
Direct sons. Oh, must be quite a few. Like, you know, practically. There the descriptions are there, but number I do not know. Like Adharma also is Brahma's son, came out from Brahma's back. So not only Dharma, but Adharma also is. Mist also, you can say, came out of Brahma's body. Yes, Swami?
Maharaj, if Prajapatis are our forefathers, then they are situated in a spiritual sphere?
No, they are not in, they are in the universe. This is a description of the universe. Is the universe spiritual sky? This is a material. Spiritual sky is beyond the universe. Spiritual sky is beyond the material nature. And the material nature ultimately has seven coverings, seven layers. Beyond that. Yes, questions?
One more question from Guru Bhagavan. Can you explain how brahmachari life and management can work even though it is not traditional?
A brahmachari life?
and management can work even though it is not traditional.
Brahmachari life and married man.
No, management.
Okay. Management. Brahmachari life and management can work. Well, in Krishna consciousness, everything is, you know, done in the light of Krishna consciousness. What Krishna wants. Here the ashram consideration is not important. Varna consideration is not important. Whatever Krishna wants, that is what is important. So if Krishna wants me to say I am a brahmachari, and if Krishna wants, or my authorities who are representatives of Krishna, they want me to manage, I have to do it as a servant of Krishna. Can a servant tell the master, say the master has gone to some place in a car, and there is just master and this chauffeur, and the master tells the chauffeur that, can you please buy some thing from the shop? And if the chauffeur says, well, I am your chauffeur, I am supposed to drive your car only, I am not supposed to go and buy things from you from the market. Will that be an attitude of a right servant, good servant? No. A good servant will be prepared to do anything that is necessary for the master. So he may be a chauffeur, but if the master says, okay, you buy the bhoga and then you cut the vegetables and cook some dinner for me, then what will be the chauffeur's attitude? Yes, sir. So that is our attitude. Whatever Krishna wants, we are prepared to do. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Srila Prabhupada has expounded in the Bhagavad Gita, one of his parts, that in the spiritual sky, there is also self-sight, and at the same time he has also expounded that in order to enter into the kingdom of God, and we have to completely give up self-sight. So I could not get it.
In order to enter into the
kingdom of God, we have to completely give up self-sight. So
give up sex life. Yeah. Okay. You see, sex life, sex desire has been described as a chain. In a prison house, one is tied up with chain. In the material nature, the living entities are tied up with a very special kind of chain. Do you know what is that chain? Right. So now, if you want to go to some other place, what do you have to do? Don't you have to release yourself from the chain? Right? Can you be tied down with the chain and still go there? Will it be possible? Right? So you have to release the chain. So in order to go to spiritual sky from the material nature, what do you have to do? Yes.
But in the same time, he has also written that there is also sex life,
so. There is sex life? No.
In the Bhagavad Gita, when he starts him by saying,
you see, that is like something like in the mirage you are seeing water, right? But it is mirage, it's dry sand, right? And you are running after that mirage and you have you are thinking that there is water. But the real water is there, right? But it's not what you are seeing in the mirage, it's just the opposite of what that is, right? So what is there goes on in the name of sex life in the material nature, that is not there. It is completely different, just the opposite. Rather, what one is trying to get out of sex desire, that is there in reality. What one is trying to get is ananda, right? So that ananda is there in the spiritual sky. And in the if at all there is sex life in the spiritual sky in that sense, that is only for Krishna. Okay? Because in the spiritual sky, to procreate, there is no need for copulation. The procreation there is in a different way, spiritual. The living entities are not born as they are born here, getting a material body. Main point is, if you want to go there, first you get rid of your lusty desires. Alright? Then only there is some hope of getting there. We can't have both. We can't have the chain tied around our hands and feet and at the same time become free and go somewhere else. Alright?
So that
attachment that is there should be offered to Krishna. That should be for Krishna. That attraction that is there, that should be for Krishna. You see, what is in the heart? In the heart there is a desire to become attracted to somebody. Right? So that attraction is there, but that attraction should be for Krishna. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for your wonderful lecture and explanation. The question is that in today's scenario, the whole atmosphere is surcharged with the lusty desire. Everywhere, wherever you enter, there. The desire is developing in everywhere and is predominant. So, then, as for the preaching purpose, when we enter there, how to bring those souls? Particularly, those who are materially highly opulent, they don't have a thing there in their agenda. So we have to go to Krishna and how to attract towards Krishna.
You see, on our part, we must keep on trying to get the living entities to come to Krishna. But it is Krishna who will actually decide who he should take and who she should bring and who will not. Who will come and who will not. So we leave it up to Krishna. And Prabhupada said that don't think that you are making devotees. It's Krishna who is making the devotees. And you have seen some people who were completely, averse to Krishna consciousness when you spoke to them. One day we see that he moved into the temple. It's amazing. And some people who have been preaching for so long, they don't even respond. On our part, we just keep trying to preach. And as far as the influence is concerned, we simply have to change our attitude. Like, you see, to be attracted to something that is beautiful is natural. But as a devotee, what is our attitude? That anything that is beautiful is for Krishna. It's meant for Krishna. So, we have to cultivate that mentality and attitude. It's for Krishna. Whether it's a beautiful flower or whether it's a beautiful house or whether it's a beautiful woman, all are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. As I mentioned, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is saying that the beauty of a woman is not for you to enjoy. It's for Krishna to enjoy. Because Krishna is the proprietor. Isn't it? So that is how we have to overcome. And if we develop that attitude, then this, no matter how destructive the situation outside is, we won't be affected by that.
Sometimes what happens, because we are in the material world, we don't see the results, so we have to get sometimes depressed. We are putting a
What was the question? I couldn't get that.
The question that, because when we go for preaching and if we don't get the proper result, over a period of time. So we also get a little bit depressed. There is a lag in our sadhana, or we are not perfect, or we are not able to reach.
Okay, that's good to see that the lack is in us than them. That's a better way to look at it. Thinking, you know, why they are not becoming devotees. It's better to think that I am not capable enough to influence them proper way to make them into devotees. So let me try harder. Right? Okay. Yes, Anshu.
Sumaji said, a comment from Guru Bhagavan. So then the ladies can argue that the same principle applies, that if brahmacharis can manage, then we can also initiate and be called prabhus. Because if varna and ashram can be disregarded, then why not gender in matter of spirituality?
Well, the thing is, you see, the engagement is one thing. Like, engagement is one thing, but changing our body and changing the nature of the body is another thing. Then I will say, then wait till your next life. Right? In this life you got a woman's body, next life probably you'll get a brahmachari body. And everyone then will call you Prabhu. You don't have to demand your rights for that. Like, these are the things that the natures have already made. That we are here talking about the body, changing the body, unless there is a sex change. Like, we came across Guru Gauranga knows that. Like, you know, let us stick to the nature, that the way nature has created us, and stick to the nature. But when it comes to service, that can change. Like, we don't have any problem if a woman is managing. Personally, I don't have problem women giving initiation. If she's qualified and qualified. Also, I don't see that a guru, to be a guru, there is an, one has to be a superman or a superwoman. To be a guru in ISKCON, I feel that one has to be simply capable of taking their followers to Srila Prabhupada and situate them properly in ISKCON. That is the role of a guru. Yes, and a woman can very well do that job. And if she can do that job, let her become a guru. Why not? We need millions of gurus in this world. To spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, we need millions of gurus. To initiate billions of people, we need at least millions of gurus. So when it, this is a service. This is a service. Like, to be a guru is a service to render to Krishna. That service can be rendered by anybody. Yeah, there was a question here. Yes.
Initially, as Brahma had some words to perform some austerity, but he did not see any form. Then how could he be able to meditate?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the Lord inspired him from within. You see, the Lord is there in the heart as a super soul. He is also in the heart of Brahma. So he instructed. Matta smritir gyanam apohanam cha, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. I give the knowledge. Smriti, I give the remembrance. So it's Krishna from within the heart of Brahma instructed. Now Brahma, withdraw your senses and project it internally. And then not only that, he played his flute and gave him Gayatri. Right? He heard the sound. It was actually Krishna's flute, but the flute was making the sound. Om Bhur Bhuva Swaha. And Brahma said, wonderful. So let me meditate on this sound. and meditating on the sound, Brahma got the deeper gyan, transcendental knowledge, and he was transported to the spiritual sky. Yes, Shyam Priyari? I'm sorry, Radha Priyari.
Sometimes it happens that they don't
want to be called Mataji. I mean,
for example,
Shyam Priyari,
we call each other by name. We don't call
Shyam.
I never call her Shyam Priyari
Mataji. Yeah. That's all right. That's all right. As long as you don't call her Prabhu.
Applicable for Prabhus, one Prabhu will call other by name. Is it applicable? Is it acceptable?
Like you say, Ganganarayan Prabhu, don't you?
No.
Or Jayesh Prabhu.
Two friends of same age, they are brahmacharis. Can they call them each other by name?
They can.
But better to call them Prabhu.
Yes. Yes, it's better.
Maybe just one comment that Sajjana Prabhu said. Prabhupada and Bhagavatam describe that men and women are together, but there is no attraction, no lusty desire. Like, and that's what Prabhupada says in the third canto.
What's that? What was the point you're making?
Sajjana Prabhu was telling that Prabhupada says that there is no sex desire in.
Oh,
there
is.
So it describes that actually they travel together in planes of lapis lazuli, but there is no attraction because everybody is attracted to the law.
Oh, I see.
And that's what they exact.
Okay.
There is one statement, there is transcendental sex life of Radha and Krishna. There is one such statement.
So that you have to understand. That is, when you come to Vrindavan, leave it up for that time. Now, follow just one clear understanding, no sex life. Alright? Yes.
Consider himself or herself to be that
this is all material and failure and success is not to be taken into consideration.
So is this the proper way to go, or
success and failure to a devotee is both the same. Both the same in the sense both is irrelevant. Right? Irrelevant because, you know, if there is a failure, Krishna didn't want it. I wanted it in a certain way, but Krishna didn't want it. So let me find out what Krishna wants. So that is the real success. And in spiritual life, I'll say there is no failure. It's all success after success after success. In the spiritual platform, there is no failure. Because whatever you do is for Krishna's pleasure, and Krishna is pleased because Krishna is seeing what you are doing. Right? At the same time, for serving Krishna, you continue even if there is obstacles. Don't give up. When it comes to serving Krishna, don't give up. Like, we have to go to say, we have to go to the temple, but it is raining. We have to go to a temple to render service. It's raining. Should I give up because it's raining? And should I think that, well, because it's raining, so it's a failure? Do you give up? No. You, in spite of the rain, you go there and render your service. So the obstacles are there, but the obstacles shouldn't hinder your endeavor. Hare Krishna. Was there any other? Okay, so I'll stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.